This is FM 100.5 and 101.9. AM 1450, Rutherford County's place to talk. WGNS, Murfreesboro, your good neighbor station. This is The Truman Show with Truman Jones. A look at the politics, news, sports, and people that are shaping Rutherford County. Now your host, Truman Jones.
Good morning, Rutherford County. It's going to be a beautiful day today, and I have one of my old friends, old buddies, Ronnie Barrett, on today, and we're going to talk a little bit about him, and we're going to talk about some of the more interesting things that he has done and continues to do, and he has been such a great role model, I think, especially for our GIs, our military, and things like that. He has done so much to assist them in their everyday efforts to make this a peaceful world. Want to let you know that this part of the show is brought to you by At Home Care. When you and your family members need assistance for a day, a week, or indefinitely, At Home Care is ready to sit down with you and help devise a practical plan to meet your family's needs. At Home Care is different than any others you see in the local marketplace because they're owned and operated by longtime resident Melissa Warren. That means that Home Care is hands-on and involved in your family members' care and satisfaction all day, every day. At Home Care provides top-quality professional caregiving services throughout Rutherford County and Middle Tennessee. Whether you need a 24/7 companion, ongoing assistance with transportation to church or doctor's appointments, laundry, housekeeping, personal care, or more, At Home Care is here for you. At Home Care, 713-4639, and online at homecaretennessee.com. That's 713-4639. Good morning, Ronnie.
Good morning, Truman.
Always good to see you. Haven't seen you in a while.
I'm always glad to be seen instead of viewed.
Well, actually, I was viewing you. I was watching the TV the other day, and I liked I believe it was the military channel. I think the one I went to. And I saw you and Chris, and I said, whoa, there's Ronnie.
Yes, thank goodness there was no close-ups, though.
Actually, there were some close-ups.
Oh, yeah, well, I'm sorry.
You had a little zit right in the middle of your forehead, but that's okay.
Makeup.
And they were talking about some of the changes and alterations that you're doing to make it easier on them. I mean, we're talking about weight. We're talking about recoil and so many other things. And I am constantly amazed how you're able to adapt and create things. I remember the first time you drew up a pistol. Do you remember? And you brought it to me, and you said, "I'm going to build this better than what they manufacture."
Well, thank goodness that's it. Of course, the firearms industry is very much like the automobile.
Yeah,
it's evolved, and things have become safer and mm-hmm. easier to handle, and made out of better materials and mm-hmm. stuff like that. So that's what we see in the industry, is that we're probably producing some of the safest, most dependable products that we've seen in years.
But you have innate ability, because you were in the photography business,
yeah.
and one of the better ones I've ever seen. You did both the personal and you did commercial photography.
Sure did.
As good as anybody.
Just a couple of doors down from here.
Yeah, actually it was.
My studio was on 312 South Church Street.
You still remember the good old days.
I still have the same number. The telephone number that was from the photography studio is the same telephone number that we're using right now at Barrett Firearms. So it never really, you know, whenever they would call, we'd just answer the phone, Barrett, and if it was a studio or a photography question, we'd take off on that, and if it was a firearms question, we'd take off on that. So the telephone number is still the same.
That doesn't go along with your personality.
Well,
you're always creating, going forward. I mean, you had a very successful photography business.
Yes, I did.
And then you had a love for law enforcement. You used to come down and work with us at the old sheriff's department when we were on 400 West Main Street.
Yes, we were young ones.
Yes, we were all very young at that time. And, you know, devil may care, I guess you might call us. But anyway, when you brought me that handgun, I had never seen you create anything like that before.
Yeah.
And I kind of had a few misgivings about whether that was going to come about or not.
Mm-hmm.
And when you brought it in, I couldn't believe it. It was a masterpiece.
God gives
do you
everybody.
Still have it?
I probably do. I've got some of the old drawings, the original sketchings. Uh-huh. I thought they were drawings then. Now I've found out that they're only sketches of stuff. But, you know, God gives everybody a talent and gifts to do what he needs done at the time. And my family is a kind of creative bunch. My mother could draw good. My father was a cabinet maker and a house designer and things like that, or builder. And we just, you
and
know,
a true gentleman, too.
All the, really thank you. Yeah. He's 92 years old now.
That is unbelievable.
So, you know, we've all, we just came from a family that could see things and see detail and do intricate stuff with their hands. And my brothers are still like that. And so, you know, that was just my gift.
Now, you passed it on to Chris, I know. I saw Angela. She was on the show, too. She was the prettiest one, of
course. Yeah, she was the prettiest one.
Yeah.
They're both the same way. They both have that same creativity. Chris is a unbelievable designer. He has built or designed many of the guns that Barrett Firearms has put out in the recent years have been his. And then everything you know about Barrett Firearms, are the from logos to images to advertisements and all that coordinating, that's all the work of Angela Barrett. So it's been great. It's, you know, the kids, my dad put me to work at 13 years old. I'd have to come over to the cabinet shop and sweep the floors and things like that. So I figured that was the thing to do. After school, they could pick them up or they could be dropped off at the firearms company and go do some work. So they've kind of been there ever since.
Now, when you came out first with the Barrett 50, I have shot it, and it has a pretty good recoil on it. It was a fairly heavy weapon when
you
came out.
Well, we unscrewed the muzzle brake for you, so we want to make sure that you get the full
punch. Yeah, I did.
it has an authoritative push, but it's about like a 12-gauge shotgun. That's one of the things that was so amazing about this rifle. You know, for something to have 400 foot-pounds of recoil, how could a 150-pound man stand up against it? But by using a series of muzzle brakes that take the gases coming out from the end of the barrel and turning them about and pulling the barrel actually back forward with it and recoiling the barrel so that it becomes like a rifle in a tube with springs in the bottom of it. You know, I know that's oversimplification of it, but it makes it where it's very easily controlled and stand up and fired, and that's why it's been adopted by over 70 different governments in the world.
That's amazing.
And I'm very proud to say that England just now recently re-adopted it again. So they had every so year some countries have to go through more trials and things, and we had British competitors, which, you know, you rarely ever win if you've got an in-house in-country manufacturer, but to get adopted again in the British was quite an honor. It is as much an honor as the United States, but like in the United States, there's been only four people in the last 100 years that had their rifle design adopted by the U.S. government, and I'm the fourth one. So it's been a wild ride, quite an honor.
I was watching, and I've watched this military channel almost consistently to see how things are changing with it. And one of the things I've noted, I know that you travel a lot and you go to each country with your design and your weapons, but they keep talking about your weapon at the very top of the list. It almost sells itself, doesn't it? Because they actually rate the abilities of each weapon.
Yeah, they do. And plus, you know, the gun has done well. It's designed well. It looks good. You can have a real fancy looking, I mean, a nice car, but if it just doesn't look good, if it doesn't come with pride of ownership,
right?
You know, it's just not going to get the good feel out of it. Well, the Barrett rifle looks very nice, and it instills confidence in the soldier and what he can do with it. It's well made, and then we have a bunch of great guys at the office and in the plant that do unbelievable service. I've always looked at the if you put out a good product and give good service to the thing and take care of the customer, there'll be money in the bank and it'll work out for you business-wise. And that's kind of how I've run this place. I think when a lot of people mention the Barrett, you know, they'll talk about the dependability of not only it but of the company that builds it. We're one of the last family-owned businesses or firearms companies. Most of them are sold, except for Beretta. Beretta is, I think, 525 years old.
Wow.
They are the oldest company in the world, and they are a firearms company. So the Beretta family still owns that, and Barrett family still owns this, and And all my kids are in it, and it's going to go on for years and years. So we're going to...
You do so much for our country, and that's through the military, of course. And working with them, you can have the best weapon in the world, but without the training on how to utilize it to get your best results out of it, you have to know an awful lot. And it's almost like it's like a scientific theory on how you actually work with each firearm.
Well, and training is perishable too, mm-hmm. because now we have classrooms there at Barrett, and we bring different trainers. We train the trainers, and they go out and train the men. Mm-hmm. And of course, these guys can stay in anywhere from 4 years to maybe 20 years. Mm-hmm. But it's a constant new a new bunch of people, a new bunch of guys that you got to run through every so often just to keep the training up. That makes the difference of, is this the best piece of equipment that you've got, or the worst? Mm-hmm. If you're well trained on it, it's amazing what you can do. If you're not familiar with it, there's just no limit to how you can mess things up. Our gun has done right well. In 2005, we were awarded the top 10 greatest inventions, mm-hmm. for the U.S. Army. It's the first time the a rifle or a firearm had ever been on that list. And this was surveying the troops of what it took to get their job done. And because of the good training, because of the good logistical supply that the Army and the Marines have put in place, they looked at this and said, this is top 10 but greatest inventions we've got right here, this rifle.
Right here in Rutherford County,
yes.
Mr. Ronnie Barrett.
Little old me.
We were talking about how great your weapon is, but you continue to work and to improve on that. Do you get a lot of feedback from the services through their officers and everything about what their particular needs are and how it may need to be adapted from time to time?
We do. Of course, the number one thing is always make it lighter. Mm-hmm. Because the guys are having to carry an awful lot of weight,
yeah.
and our gun was already a heavy rifle in the first place.
It was. And snipers have to travel a long distance on foot.
Yes, they do, and many times dragging it, mm-hmm. they'll tie it onto their leg and actually drag it into position. And so if you're dragging 32 pounds and a few more pounds of ammunition, that gets kind of tough. So we came up with a new version. Or actually we're calling it the M107A1 alteration number one, which is about 4.5 pounds, 5 pounds lighter.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that doesn't sound a whole lot when you're
that
talking
is.
About, but it is when you're firing something this big. And so we're kind of showing it now, the government's testing it. And that's what part of that special that's been running on TV is about, was about the new lighter weight rifle. So yeah, it's, and we get other feedback from different parts of the world. I remember, we've been fighting here in the desert here lately, and one of these days we'll fight in the Arctic. One of our customers, which is Norway, they said, Mr. Baird, you've got to come up here and see what we go through here. It's a lot different when you're fighting in minus 50 degree weather.
So they're already preparing for that.
Oh yeah. Well, that's their backyard.
Yeah.
You say.
Yeah.
And I tell you, I never would have dreamed of some of the stuff if how you could breathe on the rifle and then your face sticks to it.
Mm-hmm.
And until you sit up there and experience that and your face is stuck to the stock of the gun, they say, now can you fix that for us?
Mm-hmm.
Well, or if you put the gun, if there's any kind of wet or water, you put the gun away, it's so frozen in the case you can't get it out the next day. So these are the things that the feedback from the soldiers and from just the experience of going there. And I'll say that we fixed all those things, or made it work under those conditions. So we're constantly having stuff like that. And of course, if we go back to the jungle and things, there'll be unique things there that need to be accommodated. So
the weather controls weapons quite a bit, how they're able to function. The M16. Had a hard time in Vietnam.
Yes, it did, because in jungle-like environments, you can sit and watch rust and corrosion grow right there in front of your eyes. So anything from Vietnam, the Philippines, mm-hmm. Any of the Malaysia, now those Pacific, I sit at Schofield Barracks 1 year, which is in Oahu or mm-hmm. in Hawaii, and it was for a week we were shooting this gun, and I could actually sit and watch the gun, and little rust things would just crawl out from underneath it, you know, from any laminated spots. And I'd scrape it off and oil it that night, get it all cleaned up for the next day, and boy, it'd be back again. I thought, wow, it's amazing just what high humidity and rain on stuff every day can do. That's what our GIs faced in Vietnam when they got over there in the mm-hmm. high corrosion area. And the M14 and the AR-15 or M16 had to be modified to accommodate all those things.
So are you actually making weapons to adjust to the environment wherever? Do you keep those ready to go, or is this something that you just have to start all over and adapt to it?
Each government will have a model number for their rifle. Mm-hmm. Like the Germans, it's a G82. I think the Swedish is an AK-90, things like that. And so we have a build sheet for that rifle. And if it has anything unique to it, their rifles always have to stay the same. Spain uses the Model 95, which mm-hmm. is another Barrett rifle that's a bolt-action mm-hmm. repeater. Well, we make a Model 95 rifle, and we have other customers that use it. But Spain's is fixed exactly the way, you know, every time we make a delivery to them, it has to be the SP95 model mm-hmm. that has everything that would accommodate their needs. So yeah, there is they're all basically the same rifle, but sometimes you'll have different scope rails and things. All will have a different optics on it that they have determined is the best for them.
The 50 caliber is such an awesome weapon. It really is. It gives you a decided advantage. Mm-hmm. When you're on the battlefield.
Mm-hmm.
All right, what if with the, and we were talking about the weight earlier, and you have snipers that have their positions, and after a point when they have done their job, they have to get back, and sometimes do rest. How do they manage to take that weapon back? Because you don't want to leave it there. I mean, as much as you have accomplished to give the other side that particular
right.
weapon.
Well, you know, in different battlefields, what we've got right now is usually you can come down, get down off the building, get in the truck, and go. In Vietnam, of course, yeah. it wasn't like that.
Yeah.
So it's all in where you're having to fight. Most of our guys right now have been stationary, of course. You know, you take up a position, and I was telling you a story of Nick Ranstadt earlier, mm-hmm. who is the American that holds the longest sniper kill, and it also was in that
second to the Canadians.
Yes, second to the Australians. Australians
that's
now,
right.
yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Australians now have set a new longer record, a couple of miles or something like that, and thank goodness it was one of our rifles again. So anyway, it's I forgot where we were going on that, but
well, we were talking about the snipers and how do they escape and still maintain possession of the
weapon. Well, that's all part of the training on the thing, and there's provisions for having to abandon your equipment, of course, of how the destruction and everything. And so, if you had to leave it behind, I think every piece of equipment in the manual has got the destruction instructions included with it.
Do you think the 50 will maintain its level?
I do.
Because I know you work with other calibers.
We do. Mm-hmm. I do think it's going to hang in there. I think we're going to have to do something eventually about the metallic cartridge, the case itself. On just about everything we're using is made of brass,
mm-hmm.
and brass means it's made from copper. And of course, China is coming up, and China wants electricity, and they're going to get copper. And so we've seen it go up like 400%. That's why the cost of ammunition has gone up so high. So something other than copper and brass is going to have to be used one of these days.
Mm-hmm.
In World War II, of course, the Germans did a very good job of making cartridges out of steel. That would be a big help. But and then of course, copper is heavy.
Mm-hmm.
And so as you're looking to reduce weight, anything you can do, whether it be a plastic cartridge case and they've experimented with all these things, and so far nothing has come up better than what we've got.
Mm-hmm.
But it's hard to believe that we have reached a plateau from the early 1900s when the metallic cartridge case was coming around, and we've gone 100 years and we can't really get off of that plateau. You know, firearms really haven't changed that much in the last 100 years. But somehow or another, we got to have a breakthrough on stuff, or either go to the phaser one of these days. I thought we'd see the old Star Trek phaser, but still, here we are, still throwing a faster rock. Not much has changed in firearms.
Oh yes, it has.
Well, you know, if you think about it, we've got a better manufacturing techniques. Mm-hmm. But after the turn of the century, when we stopped using muzzle loaders, you know, in the Civil War, where we were dropping a ball and a patch and a powder down a barrel and one at a time, after the metallic case came out and you could load those things, John Browning took off and made the lever action rifle, which is mm-hmm. like what was in the Chuck Connors television show, the Rifleman, or John Wayne always carried,
and Jimmy Stewart, Winchester 73.
Yes, sir. All those
great weapon.
All John Browning designs.
Yeah.
And from there, we, you know, things have fairly much been put the cartridge in the tube and fire it. Mm-hmm. And so we found better ways of doing that, safer ways and things. But we're, you know, firearms actually, and even if you look at the United States, they're the same as they have been really since World War II. Mm-hmm. We came out with automatic pistols and automatic rifles and high cap magazines, if you will. So nothing has really changed that much in firearms over the last 60 something years.
It just shoots them out a whole lot more, a whole lot faster. And
no, not really.
It seems like, well, you're going all the way back to the Gatling gun, big boy. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Ronnie Barrett.
Hey, how you doing?
Ticket, please.
You got to have a ticket to get in here?
Yep.
I don't have a ticket.
Gotta have a ticket.
Well, how much are tickets?
We're sold out.
So I can't get in.
Gotta have a ticket.
Well, I got this ticket.
What kind of ticket is that?
Tennessee Lottery Black. Could be worth $1 million.
You're in. With a top prize of $1 million, the new Tennessee Lottery Black Instant Game could just open some doors for you. The Tennessee Lottery. Game-changing fun.
So, here you go.
Are we exchanging gifts this year?
I don't know. Guess I had a weak moment. Happy holidays.
Oh, well, thanks, bro, but I didn't get you anything.
Oh, that's okay. You're going to have to take that back anyway.
What do you mean? Like, to the store?
Oh, yeah, that's definitely a return.
Huh, lottery ticket. Thanks.
Check it out.
Whoa, this is a winner. Dude, this is a big winner.
Hey, just taking care of my little brother.
This year, you too can be a winner. Give the gift of game-changing fun. Happy holidays from the Tennessee Lottery.
Hi, I'm Nelson Mercado, pastor of the Murfreesboro Seventh-day Adventist Church. Have you been wondering what will happen on December 21st, 2012? Will the world as we know it come to an end? But what does the Bible say about the end of the world? Let's find out together. Join us on Friday, December 21st at 7 p.m. and on Saturday, December 22nd at 11 a.m. and 7 p.m. Our church is located at 2815 Elam Road in Murfreesboro. God bless you, and I hope to see you there.
Right now, one in three drivers is cruising around in a state of skepticism about just how much value their car insurance company is delivering. If you're one of them, I'm State Farm Agent Celeste Middleton, and I can help you get to a better state because I'll talk with you, listen to you, and help you put together a policy that has you written all over it, all backed by 24/7 customer support. Feeling less skeptical? Give me a call at 895-2700.
Get to a better state, State Farm.
I'm State Farm Agent Celeste Middleton. Give me a call at 895-2700.
Investigating a suspicious package. I'm Ron Jordan with local news from WGNS. The Laverne Police Department and Tennessee Highway Patrol have cleared a bank where a suspicious package was reported on Tuesday afternoon. Laverne Police Chief Mike Walker says the package is very much out of place, sitting next to the mechanical room. However, a test device showed the package at Regions Bank on Murfreesboro Road was harmless. After the initial report of the suspicious package, just after 3:30 Tuesday, the bank and businesses within 300 feet were evacuated as a precaution. Chief Walker released photos of the suspicious object found outside the mechanical room at Regions Bank on Tuesday. Again, they were found to be harmless. Pictures posted at WGNSradio.com. No word on who left the items at the bank. It is brought to you by Dr. Mark Kester, Chiropractic and Acupuncture Center on Broad Across from Chevrolet of Murfreesboro, a leader in chronic pain relief in Rutherford County for over two decades. Call Dr. Mark Kester at 895-1253 to set up your free consultation. A Rutherford County school student likely infected with viral meningitis. Rockvale Middle School made aware of the infection by the child's parents on Tuesday. The child's not been at school since Friday. Principal of the school will advise the parents. A bomb threat evacuated the juvenile detention center in Murfreesboro Tuesday morning, called into the building on South Church Street about 8:40. Tennessee Highway Patrol, Murfreesboro Police, and Rutherford County Sheriff's Office all responded. Bomb-sniffing dogs used to search the building. It was cleared by 11:15. Court resumed shortly after everybody was allowed back inside. Oh, hey, just a quick reminder. Today is the last full day to like the WGNS Facebook page if you want a chance to win a $500 gift card. We'll be giving away that $500 Visa gift card at 7:45 Thursday morning. To be entered, all you have to do is go to facebook.com/WGNS radio and like our Facebook page. I'm Ron Jordan. You're up to date. This is WGNS News.
That update is brought to you by Mini. Traffic can be stressful. Relax by imagining yourself in a large, spacious Mini Countryman. Check out the bigger four-door Mini Countryman with available all-wheel drive.
This is Freedom Morgan with First National Bank in Murfreesboro. Please come by and see us at 2230 Mercury Boulevard or give us a call at 615-494-4200. We'd love to have you in our bank. We'd love an opportunity to work with you one-on-one and give you the customized banking services that you deserve. This is Freedom Morgan with First National Bank in Murfreesboro. First National Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
The Outpost Armory is not just another gun store. Our staff has hands-on knowledge and experience with firearms, self-defense training, hunting, and competitive shooting. We cater to the new gun owner and the expert looking for that hard-to-find product. We carry items that the big chain stores don't and have bulk ammunition for the high-volume shooter. We defend the Second Amendment and help responsible citizens protect their families, rights, and liberties. Visit us in person or online at theoutpostarmory.com. The Outpost Armory, I-24 East at exit 89 in Murfreesboro.
Weather Eye.
We'll see blue skies and sunshine continuing across the listening area with high temperatures in the middle 60s this afternoon. And we'll have a chance for showers and storms late tonight with a low of 52. I'm WGNS meteorologist Sandra Nicety. Right now it's 52.
We want to say congrats to our good neighbor of the day, the staff at Massage Envy on Medical Center Parkway. They received flowers from Ryan's Flowers and Gifts, being our good neighbors today. And Wyatt Rigsby receives the birthday cake from Junior's Foodland. Don't know what to get that hunter or fisherman on your Christmas list? You need to stop by Murfreesboro Outdoors on Northwest Broad.
Everybody we've got here hunts and fishes. We're not just a store that don't know what we're doing. We're located at 2204 Northwest Broad Street, right in front of International Paper.
It's The Truman Show, a look at the people and news shaping Rutherford County with Truman Jones.
And welcome back with Ronnie Barrett. And this part of his show is brought to you by Murfreesboro Automotive. When you need car repairs, you want someone you can trust. Murfreesboro Automotive is that place. Chuck Haynes has a staff of certified technicians that can fix anything. From the simple oil change to major auto repair, Murfreesboro Automotive is the only place you need. Murfreesboro Automotive, turn off Broad between Chewy's and Chili's on the Ridgely Road. And actually, you make other weapons besides other rifles and handguns besides your 50 caliber.
That's correct. You just can't sit on your laurels and wait for everything to happen. You've got to come out with new stuff, and boy, we have. Of course, we've got like three different large caliber guns or 50 cals. The one that most people know, the semi-automatic, is the one I designed when I was 27 years old. Around 89, built another little bolt-action rifle that's a five-shot repeater. It got adopted by about five different governments. In 1999, Chris Barrett was on board then, and he designed a single-shot 50 cal bolt-action.
Who is your son?
Who is my son, yes. So he designed the Model 99. What was next? I guess the Rec 7, which is a semi-automatic 6.8 or 5.56 rifle, came about. The Model 98, which is a continuance of a project that Chris was working on back in 98, but he brought the 98 Bravo out, which is a 338 bolt action rifle, which was given the Rifle of the Year award by the American Rifleman, which is a NRA publication. And then that gun turned into the MRAD, which we still make both of them, but the MRAD got a Rifle of the Year award last year. So he's actually got some very prestigious awards on his designs. And the MRAD is, I think, going to be one of the big shining stars of Barrett's going forward, because it is such a revolutionary type of design, and it just gets better by the minute. And that's the rifle that you were seeing in that special on TV.
Yeah, MRAD. I really enjoyed that.
Mm-hmm.
You could tell Chris was having a lot of fun with it. He's a lot like you. He's one of these people. If you ask him what time of day is, he can tell you all about that watch that you're looking at.
Yep. He is thank God that our children turn out brighter than we do. I love that. And I think that's what.
And that's really saying something for Chris, because for you too, big boy, because he's extremely bright. And I have never seen anybody had the level of a creative mind like you have. I mean, it's unbelievable. You see things that nobody else can see.
Well, again, that's God's gift.
Yeah.
And Chris and Angela both have got it, but holy smokes, the stuff that Chris Barrett comes up with is just fantastic. It is. He also runs the, we bought a little convenience market down the road from the firearms company. Mm-hmm. Used to be a Stuckey's and then a Stop, and so I picked that up a few years back, and we tried to just let it continue to operate as as what we call the outpost general store and restaurant, and it had some great catfish out there. But when we bought that thing, Chris Barrett said, "Dad, either board that thing up and just let it set, or turn it into a retail gun store."
Mm-hmm.
And gee, I wish I had listened to him. All right, because those years that it was continued to operate as a convenience market was just painful. Didn't make any, actually lost money. And until finally I said, well, you know, you guys, that belongs to y'all. Y'all do what you want to with it. And he said, fine, we're making a retail gun store out of it. And what a fine business that has been to Rutherford County, because it has just been doing landmark business since the day it opened. And it has a great staff and everything down there. So you think, gosh, how's Chris Barrett doing this and that at the same time? I hadn't even been able to figure that out yet, but it happens, and it's so those have been a big learning experience, because even us as Barrett Firearms have learned a lot having a retail store, because it's, you sell everybody's products, and you get to see different specials they're doing and different marketing approaches that they're working on and things like that. So it's been a great learning experience, as well as a very successful business there.
It's great to have that gun store here in Rutherford County, because it's like a rite of passage for young men or young boys and girls now. A lot of people utilize that sport, and you know, even in the high schools now, they're letting them go out and shoot clay targets and things like that. I think that's important. But one of the major things is that you learn how to use them safely and for the right reason.
Yes.
And that's one of the major factors to me of having you here in our community. But weapons are arms. Let's say rifles and pistols. They're not only used for sport, but they're also collector's items.
They
now
sure
that
are.
People love to have those and put them up and utilize those to pass down from one generation to another.
You know, and more so than I think many other products. You know, a lot of people, you can almost relate a firearm and an automobile together all the time. Except when it comes down to collecting them, you've really got to have some storage space to be able to stash cars away. And so many people, you say, well, just like you said a minute ago, I wish I had that 63 Corvette I had back when I was younger.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. You would have saved it if you could. On firearms, there are such historical and sentimental reasons that, you know, just about everybody that has, well, this was granddad's shotgun and things like that, and he passed it down. And of course, firearms last a long, long time once it's built. Modern,
they're taken care of.
Yes, sir, they sure will. If they don't rust away, they're still working. So, you know, you build or purchase a firearm, you don't expect it to just last now. You want it to last through three or four more generations, and they do. So, you know, they have that good collectability. I laugh at myself when I was younger in the photography business, and I'll tell the story on Johnny Mitchell, and maybe I shouldn't, but you know,
senior
Johnny Senior, whenever I'd come across a nice little gun, I'd I was down here at the photography business, and I thought, you know, that's, I can sell that, and Johnny would buy a bunch of those from me, and I'd sell him this 45 here, and I'd laugh to myself. I thought, oh boy, I did good. I made $100 on that. And back in 75, 72, mm-hmm. that was good money. So Johnny told me, he said, you know, well, Ronnie, if I ever sell this, I'll offer it back to you. Well, last year sometime, he came back and he called and he said, well, I told you I'd sell you those back. And so he brought a box of guns up there. And like I said, I'd always been proud that I made a little profit off mm-hmm. of it. And he said, well, here's this gun here. He said, it's still wrapped up. You know who wrapped that up? You did. You know,
wow.
40 years ago. And he said,
it was bought for collective, right?
Yeah. And he said, I paid you $350 for it. And I figure that one's worth 18 and a half now. And yes, I guess it is, Johnny. And I'd put that over there in my stack. And so, you know, it was I forgot how many thousands of dollars it took to get those back. And they were worth every penny of it. But, yes, from what an investment.
I'm surprised he sold them back to you.
Well, you know, he's a man of his word, I guess. But I was honored to get them back. But how much they had appreciated. And I really couldn't argue with it. It's just true. It's a great. Wall Street Journal once said that the greatest investments or the best investments was real estate, diamonds, and firearms, mm-hmm. Because they have a, especially here in America, they hold a sentimental value.
Especially if somebody here in this county buys a weapon that you made yourself, mm-hmm. whether it be a rifle or whatever, a hunting rifle. It would have more value here because it's made right here in Rutherford County. And can you imagine 30, 40, 50 years from now when one of the heirs takes those weapons, mm-hmm. how much they'll be worth at that time? I don't think anything appreciates more right now than rifles. And we go through different stages. And there's always things that run the value up. Mm-hmm. And right now we've got a run on weapons, don't we?
Yes, we do.
And it happens every time something goes on that reaches in and grabs the emotions of this community.
Yeah, and
or this country.
It's strange, and it's only on firearms that it does that. I don't think we had after 9/11, we did not have a attack of the Federal Aviation Association's membership or mm-hmm. anything like that, or trying to condemn any of the pilots or anything like that. And we didn't have anybody proposing legislation on, well, we need to have planes that has less fuel in them, because if the fuel had been lower in the planes, it wouldn't have burned the structure up mm-hmm. in the World Trade Center towers. And you know, nobody does silly things like that.
You know what? One thing that you learn in law enforcement,
what?
Is the most dangerous weapon you have in law enforcement is the car.
The car, automobile,
the car.
Of course. Yeah. And one of the most dangerous people, you go to any hospital and say, what's killing more children than anything else? Of course, it's going to be trampolines and mm-hmm. four-wheelers and jet skis and things like that. You know, it's firearms safety record here the last many, many years has just been really good. And violent crime has been down a lot since most states have now allowed their good law-abiding citizens to carry guns. So this thing that's happened, a very unfortunate thing that's happened in Connecticut, really has nothing to do with your good law-abiding neighbor,
right?
And his right to protect himself and things like that. And but yet we have large media markets trying to sensationalize on that. And of course it's covering up other stuff. It's mm-hmm. covering up Benghazi, and it's covering up Fast and Furious and things like that, which means it has a sinister motive. There's something no good about the whole thing. We may need some reforms. We may need to harden our schools a little bit, just like the airline industry. When they see people with box cutters coming in, what do? They armed the pilot and they hardened his door, so that man is not going to lose control of his plane.
We become so complacent in this country because we expect everything to be safe. We expect everything to be like it was. You know, when we started school resource officers here in, I believe it was in 1993, we felt like that at some point the schools needed something like that mm-hmm. to you know, you have more problems coming inside from outside inside the school than you have inside the schools.
Yes.
And when you have those students and you have the teachers that are alerted to the situations that could happen, and to be able to prevent that, you need their assistance. It's just like when the neighborhood watch programs and all that. But schools are like cities. Mm-hmm. And you have to be able to protect them from anything that occurs. And we were so fortunate back then. I think that we probably have the safest schools just about anywhere in the country. And it is the rapport that you're able to gain with everybody involved. Now, when I used to have to sign the permits to purchase handguns, that was one of the steps that you had to use to purchase one. And I never will forget, I was sued years ago. A lady bought a handgun from one of the stores here and went home and committed suicide. The only thing that I was responsible for, of course, was the criminal history. But what happened was this lady was having emotional, mental problems and was actually seeing a physician at that time. And you cannot get that information anywhere. Unfortunately, they're protected, and there's almost no way, in fact, there is no way that you can receive that information. So those type of things.
That may be one of the things that's on the table for review.
Yeah, those type of things are things that are possibilities.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, we have so many freedoms in this country, and rightfully so, that sometimes things are going to happen no matter what. But
yes.
But I'm constantly amazed at how the pendulum swings so rapidly. Yes. When something goes wrong in a country this size.
You know, I have another one too, though, Truman. And like I said earlier, firearms are about the same that we've had in the last, since World War II, since mm-hmm. the last 60 or something years. There's nothing really that, you know, much different or advanced has really come out mm-hmm. there. And we didn't have this problem back then. That, you know, I remember when I was going to school, and I graduated high school in 72.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we still had people that had their deer rifle in the rack of their
right.
their truck in the back and everything. But to tell you the truth, there is something different that has happened over the last 40 or so years. We've had an unbelievable amount of violent movies and video games and things like that where you shoot up everybody.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed watching Zombieland. I thought that was really funny and everything. But look what that was. That was somebody going through that shoot anybody and everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Look at the many different video games that you have, and I've played a time or two on some of those, and they are fun, but it's mm-hmm. it's shooting everybody and shooting everything. Well, if you take somebody that's got a little bit of a mental problem, and we've always had people that have had a little bit of a mental problem.
Mm-hmm.
I think all of us know about four or five folks at any given time.
Right.
But now all of a sudden, you know, we have some sort of weird urge for people to go out, and they're going to kill themselves, and they want to kill a bunch of other people right before they go out. Well, you got to look what's different here then. Well, one of the things that is different is the amount of violence they've been watching for 40-something years, and I believe you can desensitize people, and maybe if they're living in a world where they are going out in zombie land and shooting everybody, mm-hmm. It too ought to be one of the things where we're considering of what in the heck is going on with some of these folks.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you know, gun-free, I just go down on record, gun-free zones is a bad idea. It's a dangerous place to be, especially, and that's your theaters, anywhere that it has been declared a gun-free zone, you know, you're subject to not being able to defend yourself or your loved one, and you're in a bad spot. Get out of there.
Well, you and I grew up in, when there were guns used, it was just like Roy Rogers would shoot somebody's gun out of their hand, or you very rarely saw a cowboy kill another cowboy back
mm-hmm.
when we were the bad ones. Of course, the good ones wore the white hats, and the bad ones wore the black hats. It was easily discerned who was who at that time. And you're right. I mean, you can go see some of Commando, Arnold Schwarzenegger
mm-hmm.
movie. I mean, what did he kill? About 300 people?
Yes.
And maybe he got a slight wound or something.
And
everything is completely unrealistic.
And the firearm is very glamorized.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think Peter Gunn or Roy Rogers ran around with getting...
Well, I had a two-gun holster set.
Did you? Yeah. But, you know, you see the stars or the actors with the gun in front of their face and the glamour shot of it rolling around and all. It's just overboard. It's just too much.
Well, we have the anti-hero instead of the hero now.
Mm-hmm.
And everything has changed as far as that's concerned. Now, how influential is that on our young kids? I mean, sometimes you just, if it's a kid that has a normal personality, probably not going to buy them at all.
You are what you think.
Yeah.
You are what you think. And if somebody is spending their day playing the shoot 'em up video games, mm-hmm. and I know there's kids that can play them all day long, and then they're eating up the movies that are, yeah, they're entertaining, but boy, are they violent. And, mm-hmm. And so if that's what's in your brain, if that's what you're thinking, if that's what you're being fed all the time, you get out what you put in. Mm-hmm. So there's no denying that is the difference that has happened in our society between, you know, between 40 years ago or 50, 60 years ago to now. Mm-hmm. We've always had firearms. It's about the same type of designs. We've always had mentally unstable people. We've always had criminals. But boy, oh boy, some of the stuff that we're fed, what we're putting into our minds, is just dangerous. And I don't know how, you know, it's going to take some real creative stuff to figure out what is the wise thing to do here. But it is not the firearm. It is not the airplane. Mm-hmm. It's not an inanimate object. It is the hands that those things are placed in.
You know, you and I were very fortunate and blessed to be raised in good families. And I can still remember with great fondness going hunting with my dad. And when I was about 6 years old, that was my introduction to a 16-gauge shotgun when I was 16. And I learned a lot about weapons, especially the safety and what you're supposed to be utilizing those weapons for. I mean, that's part of the process. A lot of times we don't have that great relationship, unfortunately, where the rite of passage where you go from a young kid to as you grow older. It was just part of the learning process at that time.
Well, do you think you've seen the video games? Do you think you'd get that sense of safety and responsibility from
I don't do the video games.
Well, you've seen other kids do.
Yeah.
It's a target moves, you shoot it. Mm-hmm. This goes, you shoot it. And actually, it's quite real, and some of it's very rough and graphic. And so what is the young person learning of that?
Well, they're learning inside their den or bedroom, looking at all this stuff, instead of going out and actually leading a real life. Yes. I mean, that's
yeah. I've never heard a young person say, "Yes, I remember the first time my dad played video games with me." I've never heard that, but I have heard many times. I remember when my dad took me out shooting, taught me responsible stuff, taught me that this is what that does. Mm-hmm. If you this is how this watermelon or fruit or something just show the power of it and what reality is, and what truth is instead of getting it from the television or from games and things like that. It's us parents that need to be passing on good values and responsibility like that.
You know, it's not realistic to believe that you can have an unarmed community that's going to be safer than an armed community.
Oh, well, history has always shown that's not the case.
Because you know as well as I do, and you used to work with us some, the criminal element is going to be able to get weapons.
Of course.
And we've actually seen weapons that were made by the criminal element that were just as lethal as anything you can make in your shop. So, you know, most of the time, calmer heads will prevail as the situation goes on. And then they're heard, and then they can sit back and see the reality of what they want to do.
Yes, the law, I hope and pray that happens, because laws passed against good law-abiding citizens, which are the only ones that's going to obey the laws, mm-hmm. is not going to have no effect mm-hmm. on the problem cases of criminal activity. Mm-hmm. it's actually it makes it worse. We now have quite a record of showing that it was a terrible idea to disarm your good law-abiding citizen. Mm-hmm. And that's why we're seeing crime rates go down significantly in every state that passes concealed carry. And there has not been any big shooting bloodbaths and things like mm-hmm. that. That's absurd. You know, to distrust your good law-abiding neighbor, you know, the problem is with you. Mm-hmm. You know, you want to have law-abiding people, you know, free and able to defend themselves and able to defend their property and you and everybody else. Instead of disarming them, what would you rather have stuck in your yard? This is a gun-free zone or this is a defended area?
I'm constantly amazed that big city chiefs will come out against firearms.
It's people control.
Yeah, well,
it's not gun control, it's controlling people.
Yeah, and if you look at it logically, I don't care how large your law enforcement force is, you can't be everywhere at any given time, and most of the time it's going to take you a while to get there. So those people that do not have weapons in their homes are totally there for the taking.
Mm-hmm, they are. The criminal activity usually takes place in a matter of seconds, and the police, you can usually arrive within a matter of minutes. Mm-hmm. So they're there in time to write the report. You need to have emergency equipment in your home to take care of different things that normally may come around. Mm-hmm. A firearm is one of those. There was one, I can't remember if it was a city or a county or something, looking to raise the taxes on people that did not have a firearm. Because if you're going to depend on the government taxpayer to provide all of your protection, you need to pay more taxes. And I thought, well, isn't that interesting? I guess that's true. You know, that's like saying, oh, I don't have a hammer or a screwdriver in my toolbox, or I don't mm-hmm. have a flashlight. Oh, Mr. Government, bring me a flashlight, will you? Mm-hmm. Well, you should have stuff like that in your emergency toolkit. And so, you know, where we have done it, where different states have allowed that, our crime rates have gone down. You know, as you said, cooler heads mm-hmm. prevail, and good decisions, I think, inevitably will come.
Sometimes we overreact in a positive way. Sometimes we overreact in a negative way. And right now, for a person who owns a gun store, it's like a run on the bank, except it's just the opposite. Everybody wants to go in and get a weapon before they completely cut off their ability to buy weapons.
There's a fear of that, yes.
It's like a panic right now, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It's the story of the virgins with no oil in their lamps.
Yeah.
You know, you really should have come earlier.
We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Ronnie Barrett.
We're talking with this area's only certified physician in heart CT, Dr. Rishi Saxena. Before you have a stress test or heart catheterization, consider the 64-slice CT scan.
We could find the same information without taking too much risk.
It only takes minutes, there are no needles, and it could show things other tests miss.
You could act on it and prevent heart attack and death from happening.
No referral is necessary for the 64-slice CT scan. Call 896-4800 and make an appointment with Dr. Rishi Saxena.
Everyone loves Stones River Manor.
I love the people that works here and the people that lives here and all of the convenience that we have.
Stones River Manor, behind Rite Aid, at the intersection of Haines and Memorial.
I have lived here to be 5 years, and I've loved every minute of it.
Stones River Manor, it's home.
Hi, this is Peter Demas, and I'm inviting you to come eat with our family at Demas's Restaurant.
If you're on a diet, Demas is for you.
And then we also created a one-page menu. One side is for all our low-carb options, and one side's all our low-calorie options. I always find it frustrating when I'm dieting. I go to a restaurant, I'm trying to find something that I think is low-calorie or low-carb, and I realize I went way over my calories thinking I was eating good. I'd like to invite you to come to our Demas's Restaurant in Murfreesboro, which is located on 1115 Northwest Broad Street, Demas's Restaurant.
He knows Rutherford County as good as anybody. Truman Jones. It's the Truman Show here on WGNS AM and FM.
And welcome back with Ronnie Barrett again. Just got a text from his wife, Miss Donna.
That was encouraging. I looked down there and My wife, I'm married to the most wonderful woman in the world. She was
she's a sweet lady.
Yeah, used to, most folks know her as Representative Donna Rowland, mm-hmm. and of course she's Donna Barrett now. Mm-hmm. And she sends me a text and says, "You're doing great." So
so you haven't messed up yet, huh?
You know, no. And so
that's the best compliment you can get is from your wife. When your wife gives you a compliment, you know that's really something special.
Well, it's special to me.
Now, there's one thing I didn't ask you, and I don't know why when we were talking about it. You go to all these countries selling your military weapons. Do you ever draw a line? If a country calls you and they want to see that weapon and how it performs, how do you say no, I am not going to do it?
Oh, my.
That's a tough one, right?
It is tough. And, you know, the State Department makes those decisions on that.
That's good.
It is, they approve all sales. And actually, if I were to say, you know, I just don't want to sell to you, mm-hmm. they could apply to the government. The government would purchase the guns and then provide them through that way. So it's fairly well regulated by the state. They look at that as is keeping the balance, and that's going to be one of their calls. It's a strange little partnership there. You can try to sell it, or they can try to buy. The State Department ultimately says who will purchase and who will not.
You know, one of the worst offenders that I can ever remember dealing with firearms was actually the government itself when we were dealing with Mexico, mm-hmm. with on the border with the drug trafficking.
Yes.
I mean, there is nothing that's completely perfect when you legislate things, but sometimes bad decisions can happen, and it's awful strange that it was through the government that actually happened.
Yes, yes, it is. Like I said, I hope that they have better information than I do, because some things just don't make sense. Of why they deny this customer and why they accept another one. Mm-hmm. And you hope that they have the inside. Although the only thing you can do is hope they have the inside information of what's the best decision on it.
Well, I'm very happy that we got somebody that we can depend on here.
Well,
And you've done a lot for the community. Donna has done a lot for the community. And just having you here is a real plus, and it's a plus for me to have you as a friend, and I appreciate you being on.
Thank you. Running. Thank you so very much.
Thank you. And we'll be back in the morning at 9:00.